Could I ask a question?
This question that you just asked, or another?
No, another one. When Dogen talks about Zazen being the great matter, what do you think he's talking about? Why is it the great matter? Just sitting on a cushion and staring at a wall in a balanced way.
Well, you have to find the answer to that yourself. I can't tell you. You have to take the English translation of whatever he wrote and map it onto your own experience. And then say, okay, yeah, I could call it a great matter. Or you can say, no, I don't know what it means. Maybe it means something that I haven't got yet. But if you think that, then you're looking in the wrong direction.
What do you mean, looking in the wrong direction? You mean asking those kind of questions?
No, if you think Dogen meant something by the great matter which you haven't experienced, and therefore you've got to do something more, or wait longer, or try harder to get this great matter, that's the wrong direction. Because what he means is sitting in Zazen is the great matter. So take those two words, map them on your own experience, and find for yourself what is great about it. Find something great for yourself, whatever the word great means to you. I can't, it's no good me telling you something other than what I've said.
Does it resonate with you personally, the statement? Does it resonate when you read it?
Well, I know he wrote it, but I haven't thought about it. Nobody said it to me. I haven't read it for a long time. But if you say, do I feel that sitting in Zazen is the great matter? Yeah, I do.
And you found it out for yourself?
Pardon?
And you found it out for yourself through experience?
Well, I sat for 40-odd years every day. So if you do something every day for a very long time, it must be a great matter, mustn't it? Otherwise, why would you do it every day for 45 years?
Can I share something?
Yeah.
So my 14-year-old daughter asked me what I was doing, and I told her briefly what's going on, sitting. And she said, how long are you going for? Where are you going? Are you paying money for that? And when I told her how much, she laughed at that. So it must be important.
It's not the conventional meaning of two words, great matter. And then look, get the conventional meaning in the words and look for something great. It's to notice that everything we do is great. Like, I clean my teeth every day. Well, I think, didn't you last week on Sunday read a transcript or something? About my Nishijima Roshi.
Yes.
Did about eating meals and doing ordinary things.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that was a talk he gave on the radio in Japan. So the essence of that talk is Everything we do is the most important thing. So in that sense, everything we do is a great matter. But the thing which was the anchor for Dogen, and apparently it's the anchor for me because I've been doing it for so long, is sitting. Didn't feel like a great thing to do. I guess it's just something I've been doing. But there again, washing my face every morning didn't feel like a great thing. But actually it is. Or eating breakfast. And that's why if you look through the Cohen stories, there's one in which I think some Chinese student asks his teacher, what is the essence of the teachings? The teacher says, fetching water, chopping wood. Everything we do is the most important thing. But we don't notice it.
So by doing something stupid, we are brought in contact with what is actually just in front of us, in the here and now.
No, we're already in the here and now when we do something that you might call stupid.
Isn't just being here now a strange and wonderful fact?
It is very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Being in itself is something magical, then, as well as something very ordinary that we used to.
Yeah.
Understanding that is, in my way of thinking, part of a great matter. Making sense of that.
Funny, my life in the Czech Republic is in small ways becoming simpler. I have less to do. I'm getting used to having less to do. And I came back to Bristol on Sunday to my brother's house, and they're having the top of the house converted, a loft conversion. So there's builders coming in and out, and there's a little bathroom, and they're fitting, and they're discussing with the builders what colour the walls will be and what kind of shower knobs to have, and they couldn't find the right shower knob, all big problem to discuss. And it seemed like I can see more clearly from outside what society offers us. I mean, modern society. And it's quite amusing, really.
Endless choice.
That we involve ourselves in these activities very seriously you know, and a problem like the shower knob can be an all-consuming problem for my brother because he's quite fussy. No, that's not the right one. And looking on the internet for the code number, no, that's not quite the right. So that we're all doing that. It's part of living in this multi-choice, multifaceted society. But it's as if we invented a huge game. We're all playing it. And if we don't realise that we're playing a game, I don't mean a trivial game, it's not. If we don't realise it, then we're trapped in it. And to be trapped in it is quite serious for us. I don't mean to escape from it. Just to notice that we're so involved in it, we don't notice what it is. It's only a shower knob, Graham. I wanted to say to him, but I didn't, because he would be upset. No, it's not. It's my life itself. Or, you know, and all our problems generally like that. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but lots of the things that we fill our lives with are part of this intricate game of converting our loft, or buying a new car, or getting a new job. And what's the job? Working hard for what? I don't know. Get money, I suppose. Get money for what? Well, so I can live comfortably. You know, it's what we do, isn't it? But I feel, having moved away, I felt it in Japan to some extent, in the 30 years I was in Japan. Japanese society in those days, was very gadget-materialistic. But I've moved up right onto the edge of Europe now, and I can almost move away from all of it. The town I live in has a 1970s feel to it, and just coming back here. It's quite a strange feeling, really. And then we all get in cars and come here so that we can sit quietly together and notice what the rest of our life is like. Well, I don't mean it as a criticism. So I've got a question that I can't answer. Is it necessary for human beings to be involved in activities that drive us forward? Or is it not? Mm. Is the fact that I am happier sitting doing nothing for longer periods because I'm lazy? Or is it okay to live like that? Could we all live like that? Those kind of questions I haven't got answers for, but they're quite interesting, really.
I don't quite understand, Mike. What is the difference between me carefully selecting my shower knob,
yeah,
or me carefully brushing my teeth in the morning?
Well, it's
like,
you know what the difference is.
I know what the difference is, but you're saying that one of them is bad and none of them is good.
Oh, I didn't say that. But no, just I noticed that for my brother, that particular act was a matter of almost life and death. I don't know whether I can answer, really. That's part of the question I have. Yeah, maybe it's my question too. I can't answer yours. Maybe I have the same question. Is brushing your teeth and selecting a shower not the same? Do we need to select shower knobs to fill our lives up? What would we fill our lives up with if we didn't all have shower knobs? Would we fill it up with something else?
Water from the tap. It's a good
Was it part of your brother that was getting very sort of aggravated with the builders that weren't respecting his desire for shower knobs or whatever? They weren't sort of... There was a tension there, they weren't taking it seriously or they weren't doing what they wanted them to do, basically. Is that a lot of what the aggravation comes down to, is that it's to do with actual communications with people, these things?
No, in the case of my brother, it's he wants to get everything as exactly right as he can. So that in itself, in any situation, if we want to get something as exactly right as we can, we create problems. It's a result of our efforts towards perfection. I don't mean that we shouldn't do it or the problems are bad. Or I don't mean any of that. Just it's a fact.
It can be a trap, can't it? I mean, do you remember Jacques Tati's films? Jacques Tati, the filmmaker, the French comedian, made a number of films about sort of gadgets, very sophisticated gadgets that keep going wrong. Like, you know, he's got these electronic gates to his house and they keep shutting when he wants them to open and open when he wants them shut, and windows and all sorts of things. By the time the film's over, he's spent the entire time trying to correct these gadgets.
Oh,
that
that's
keep...
nice. I've not seen that.
But getting back to the shower tap, that is... My sister had a similar experience and they spent forever choosing tap forces. And they all went wrong. You know, like, literally, you turned it on and it didn't go on. You switched it off and it went on. And it stopped and it suddenly poured loads of water and then it didn't. And then they had to go to an architect to sort it out.
Yeah.
A tap, you know.
Yeah.
And it is, there is an insanity in that. There's a kind of madness.
Don't home too much onto the tap. Although it actually happened, I mean it as a metaphor.
Yeah, but actually it hits a big chord with me because, I mean, for instance, there are loos that you can buy which you can't plumb once they're in. You can't get to the parts that you need to get to without taking the whole thing out. And I do think it's part of the madness that you're discussing, this endless way of reinventing.
In what sense is that?
Well, reinventing something that's very simple and works, and then it doesn't work because you've designed it in a way that creates a whole load of problems.
No, that's not really the main point I was making.
I realise it's not the main point.
Lev's question is really a nice question because it's really my question. What is it important for us to do this? Is it important for human beings to have serial activities, a series of activities that take us from one thing to another, and fill our lives up? And the reason I'm asking that is because I'm now in a situation where that doesn't happen. I have periods where there's nothing. And I'm finding it nicer. I'm getting used to it. So if I can sit for a couple of hours just sitting, I don't mean practicing zazen, although it might be. Just sit for a couple of hours. I don't want to read or think or anything. Just sit. Is that okay? And would it be better for me to have a life that was full of activity, like a shower knob and then the colour of the wall and then... So it's a question. you can answer it for yourself. So, yeah, is it the same as brushing your teeth?
I'm just very, so, like, I understand that some people express their personality, like Hala's saying, through how they decorate their house. It's like,
yes,
it's connected to their identity. I can understand that. What is most surprising to me is that Dogen wants me to express, to be so serious about brushing my teeth. That's what's more shocking to me. Is that,
oh,
you know,
I
like,
see, is it?
It's like, that's something which is low has to be elevated, you know, and something which is high has to be brought down, you know.
Why is it low?
Well, exactly, like, because
you
I,
said you said something which is
I don't think about designing my toothbrush in a special way. You know?
No.
Yeah. I just brush my teeth.
What is the value of human activity? I remember in Japan, living in Japan, working in a Japanese company as toilets, company toilets, and every day there would be usually a woman cleaning the men's toilets, and everybody who went in there would say to the woman, "Thank you very much." And then I remember coming back to the UK and noticing that if we see somebody clean the public toilets, we probably walk round them and walk out and say nothing. We have a kind of a habit to think that they're down there. So we give a hierarchy of values, which happen to be different in Japanese society. I don't mean they're better. So is the value of cleaning your teeth same as the value of inventing a new fantastic algorithm? Is the value of me sitting after doing absolutely nothing the same as the value of Graham getting this really nice new loft to live in with a bathroom and a shower and all? I don't know, what's my question about, do you think? The value of activity? What is activity? How necessary is activity? Dogen writes about, we translate it as action. The word in Japanese is gyo. And it's, as with a lot of Japanese concepts, it's very vague. So he seems to say that in action, the world becomes real. So in lots of Japanese Soto temples, they apparently interpreted that to mean if you're busy all the time, you're in reality. So they get the training monks rushing around, cleaning the floor and doing this. Is that what he meant? All these questions, really.
Dogen lived a very ambitious, successful life on his own terms, though, didn't he? He fundraised and founded monasteries and...
Yes, he did.
Of people, coordinated
them.
Yes.
I guess so. So is that what we should do? Well, yeah, I mean, should we be busy? Is it good to be busy? Is there some kind of deep Buddhist value in being busy?
Making yourself busy can be a form of distraction, can't it?
Pardon?
It can be a form of distraction.
From?
To yourself. From unpleasant thoughts, from having to face reality.
Okay.
You tell yourself, I'm important, or I'm doing something very valuable because I'm staying late at work, or I'm writing lots of PowerPoint slides, or whatever it is you do. But, you know, I don't think sitting, like you describe, is the same as not doing anything. You're not feeling the need to be busy, but you're actively sitting, wholeheartedly sitting, and just letting that moment happen. Like that.
That's okay.
In our questionnaire, when we take up clients, they fill the form, and one of the questions, do you feel guilty when relaxing? And I reckon how many people actually think of this question for the first time when they complete the form.
Yeah.
Do you feel guilty when relaxing? And most questionnaires I've seen, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people do feel guilty when they sit and do nothing.
Mm.
And that's the this question there is for reason, because obviously you can't fix the body if you don't reduce the level of stress.
Is that right? Could you say it again, loudly?
To fix any problem in the body, you really need to bring the stress down. And any active form of relaxation or doing nothing is exactly what helps to reduce the level of the stress.
Okay.
To get your body better, basically, to get healthier.
So do you mean that the body doesn't repair itself
unless
you're not stressed?
In a stable.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Elena, you remind me of a phrase, comfortable in your own skin is the phrase, to be at ease with oneself.
I think it's in our culture, this thing of justifying one's existence, you know.
Well, not only our culture, it's in Japanese culture and it's in Chinese culture. People are busy all the time, aren't they?
Yeah.
I remember going into parks in Japan and there's no seats anywhere because people don't sit down. You go to the station, there's no seats, they don't sit down, to keep moving. So, you know, is it out of this culture? Maybe it's modern civilization. I don't know.
From the culture that I've been in all these years.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it applies to others or not. But
yeah.
What I feel is at the heart of your observation is it's okay to be, and that you don't have to justify your existence by ticking sort of 50 boxes of I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Ah, I'm allowed to exist.
Okay.
I can just be in that moment, sitting, doing nothing, or whatever the word is for not being busy, you know. I mean, you can't really do nothing, can you? She's laughing at
Or, to put it another way, can you really do nothing?
I'm not at liberty to say until my solicitor's present.
if we read about what... If we get a picture of what Dogen did during his short life, 52 years, was he busy? Did he plan to do all those things? Did he look for funds for the temple? Or did he just address things as they happened? I've no idea. It's not.
He spent a little while drifting about like a water weed, didn't he?
He did, didn't he? And then what did he do?
He probably founded a temple after that.
Well, he writes. He drifted about and then he decided that if he drifted about, nobody would have the opportunity to learn what he learned. I mean, these are questions I've got. I'm not making them up as rhetorical questions for you to solve. They're the questions I've got.
I can say something based on my experience. And the experience of writing books over the last 7 to 8 years. When I started to engage with that, I found it very, very difficult when I felt I couldn't write, and I was reduced to just lying down doing nothing. sitting around. And I always felt that I really had to fight against that, because that was an aberration. I was being lazy or resistant to the process. Over time I learned that most of the active creative process was happening when I was lying down.
Mm.
So there's something, for me, there was something deeply productive that was happening that I couldn't really articulate. It was going on when I couldn't do anything.
That's very interesting.
And it also links for me with ideas that we had until very recently about agriculture. So you wouldn't continuously cultivate land. You would go through a process of leaving it fallow. It was doing absolutely nothing. And it was required in order to kind of regenerate the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't fit with our contemporary understanding of always increasing and maximising production. So we don't do that anymore. So those are the thoughts I've been having as you've been speaking.
Mm. Yeah. Well, the parallel between you saying the creative processes happen when you were resting,
mm.
with Yogena's
mm-hmm.
statement that the body needs to be resting,
yeah.
to heal,
mm-hmm.
as it were, or to be mended.
I find that when I'm bored, I'm like most creative, because I'm bored. I'm just.
What does bored mean?
When you're not doing anything and you're just sitting there, and suddenly I just have like all these ideas.
Yeah.
And, but when I'm always occupied doing something, they don't come. It's almost when I'm just not doing anything and just sometimes just observing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I get all these ideas, like about maybe what I'm, you know, my work related to work or not related to work.
Yeah.
But if I'm always occupied, they don't really come.
Mm.
And then I, yeah. But it's quite interesting that when I'm not doing something, these ideas, inspiration sometimes, it just come to me. So.
Mm. Hope some come to me.
What I find very difficult is when people are dragging you in their activities, you know, in what they feel important. I've got one particular colleague who virtually just says that, but it's important,
mm-hmm.
it's important, it's urgent and important now. But it's urgent and important probably, maybe for him, not for me. And more often I just find myself being plainly rude, just like... Go away, I'm busy. But because what do you do?
Great.
Well, I'm Russian, so I can eat lots of things because it's generally accepted that we are blunt and whatever. So, yeah. But what do you do with people like that who are trying to drug you in something which has nothing to do with, which is not your concern, basically? You know, just like, come on, we need to have a chat. No, we don't. Come on, we need to make this work. No, we don't need to make one person.
Go
away. What do you do with this? You know, and on one hand, okay, it's work, so I shouldn't really even have preferences. Who cares? 8 hours there, wait for whatever. It's just, you know, then you end up not living your life, just giving somebody else's preference.
I'll share with you a work-related way of coping with that.
Sometimes it's work is kind of like easier to give examples,
right?
But it's all around.
My suggestion is to take a very long time to do it, and do it wrong. That'll be the last time you get pulled in.
There's a book called, it doesn't have to be crazy at work. It doesn't have to be crazy at work. He's called GHH. I mean, he's like a software person, and it's based on his company, which is about 60 people, and like the kind of practices that they have. And they like work 40 hours a week in the winter and 32 in the summer.
Mm.
And nobody believes that they built a company that way. They're just like, no, it's Silicon Valley, you have to work, you know, 100 hours, you know, otherwise you're not successful. And just like, and people just like, no, but we are successful. No, you're not like global. It's like, oh, you just elevate your bar until it fits your definition of, you know, until it fits your worldview. Because you're like, we are successful, we're profitable, and we don't work hard, you know, like we have a life. And one of the things he has, which we actually started doing in my team, is they're called treehouse hours. It's when like 4 hours a day, there's like no emails, no phone calls, no communication at all. You're doing work, but you just, there's no talking. And you're just in your own world, and you can relax, you can take time to do something, you know, like. And it's quite a radical idea, actually, in the workplace.
It's long been recognised that in places like in Scandinavian countries that they do have less, they work fewer hours,
yep.
Are more productive, and generally in general level of well-being in those countries are much higher in the sort of measures they use to measure these things, yeah.
So there's value that Mike is asking. It's not just like value in terms of money that you make, but also value in terms of how long you live and your health.
Yeah.
You can objectively measure it.
And the quality of what you come up with. I mean, it made me think of Howard Hodgkin, a painter who died not long ago, and most of his time was spent looking at his paintings. He spent hours and hours and hours just sitting with a thing that he'd started, and sometimes he'd put it away for 4 or 5 years, and in one moment would suddenly change something after looking at it for on and off for sort of 5 years. So it's, I think it relates to a lot of different aspects of life, that thing of sitting and being with things.
I mean, some people do really seem to thrive on the kind of 100-hour-week thing, or they seem to be really...
They do, yes. Apparently, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it would drive me insane, I think, that sort of relentlessness. I mean, it's not those kinds of work where it's
like
so
my ex-partner, Lisa, she's so busy, it's unbelievable. But it's as if she needs that in order to be sane and healthy.
Yeah, the first step in that book is to fire the workaholics. Like, you have to fire them, like, otherwise it's like the culture becomes toxic. And they just make everybody else mind bummed up, and, like, you know, spin up Elena, you know.
Keep up.
I suppose if you're in that kind of cultural scene at work, and then you map it at home, you do the same kind of things at home, then you can't give value to cleaning your teeth, can you? Or doing the washing up, or even cooking. So you buy stuff in.
So I think about this. Everyone's the thought, because my, you know, shit happens, right? So you're like, and I just say, you know, what if resources weren't a problem? What if I didn't need to worry about resources paying for every, you know, just what if that was not an issue? What would I do? And in some sort of diffuse subconscious way, the things that I really value, that are really priorities, sort of bubble up because I'm not. I just let that part. And it helps. Maybe that's what's behind the 35-hour work weeks too, right? If you're not like, then you might be able to step back from the situation and think, well, you know, if I've got plenty, if I don't need more, what would I do?
I have to face this hole in my life, you know. I have to talk to my partner, I have to like talk to my children, you know, like think what I'm gonna, what's like, what am, what is the meaning of it all? Is this fucking hard, you know?
Well, maybe that's the questions we should ask.
I end up doing the laundry when I ask that.
There's only that much laundry you can do.
It's a start.
What did you think of that transcript?
It was great. It went down very well, I think. It kind of spanned a very broad philosophical outlook and then kind of narrowed it right down to cleaning the toilet, brushing the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
It's very very lucid in boiling Buddhism as a philosophy down to everyday action.
Everyday action. What's action? What's inaction? Which is most valuable? What's valuable in my life? Everything? What is my life? Can you ever have a hole in your life? we create all these images, don't we? It'll leave a hole in my life if I stop doing that. So, what kind of hole? Where is the life in which the hole will be? And all these things. We live in a dream, a construction. And I think that sitting in the great matter is, I wouldn't say a way, it's seeing through it, little by little, very little by very little, because the first thing we have to see through is all the rubbish that's going around our heads. Oh, my zazen was terrible. No, it wasn't. You're just sitting very peacefully and nicely on the cushion facing the wall. No. I mean, in my head. So we've got in our heads, we've got this capacity to make things terrible and to create whirlpools, storms. Strange, isn't it, really? So to face all that is first step in seeing through to the great matter.
There's a chapter, isn't there, called The Dream Within a Dream Within a Dream. Is
yeah.
that right? Which it kind of acknowledges what you've just described in a different way, perhaps, but isn't it? That we do live in a sort of dream, that reality is almost beyond comprehension to take in, especially when you get a nice new bike for Christmas.
The other thing that struck me coming back this time was how much people talk. Because I went to a pub and talking with a little group of family group, but everybody else around the pub is talking. I'm looking to see, I wonder what they're talking about. There's all this kind of twittering, and we seem to need it. Do we need it? We do. What's the? Because often when what we're talking about, if you listen in on people's conversations, oh yeah, I did that. Yeah, no. Last summer we went. Yes, but it's fantastic, wasn't it? Did you go into that blah 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 cafe? What did you have to eat? Blah 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 blah. So, we need to exchange experiences with other people in words. Is it important? I don't talk very much, so I'm kind of biased, really.
But you do need to talk. You need to say what you want to say.
Do I?
I think so, otherwise you wouldn't say, would you?
I feel duty. What would you all do if I wasn't here to talk?
I don't mean in this situation.
Oh, okay.
In the other part of your life, I guess sometimes impinge on.
Oh, yeah, the opposite is to feel lonely.
Yeah.
Mm. Which is different from alone.
We need that connection. And for myself, I need that. And if I don't see somebody for a long time, I hear myself talking an awful lot. If I've not seen for a while. But there's an awful lot of chit chat you could do without.
I wonder if Dogen talked to all his monks in that temple 800 years ago.
I imagine they had a bit of a laugh.
I like them,
he spent a lot of time writing, didn't he? We've got evidence of how much he spent writing with all the books and verses he collected. Can imagine him in his little office just writing up.
Well, they have people writing down for him as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's
right. Just like in the middle of a forest with a bunch of blokes.
Mm.
A bit of laugh sometimes.
Well, how are we doing? Is there any time to finish?
Mm.
It's as if I've spent 40 years studying Shobo Genzo and all that kind of stuff. I've landed up with all my questions being really simple and unanswerable in a way. And nothing to do with Buddhism. What is valuable? What isn't valuable? Is it good to do nothing? What is doing nothing? Do we need to talk to each other as much as we do? What do we do about society, this great big machine that grinds us up?
I suppose a lot of people don't really do nothing even when they're doing nothing. It's so easy just to piss time away on the internet and stuff and just distracted things that aren't really refreshing and aren't. What Val was talking about is allowing kind of the deeper kind of stuff to process within you and ideas to think. I think just living this sort of slight stand of slightly restless distraction most of the time. Whereas actually just to sit and do nothing is actually quite, quite profound to me.
Profound.
Very ordinary sort of
yeah,
thing.
It feels profound actually, if sometimes. So we've reached the profound. 10 minutes to Zazen now. The great matter. I should say your great matter and my great matter.
Put all the pressure on me, please.
Just pump your ties up a bit harder. Thank you very much.
Thank you.